The Texans are starting their organized team activities, their OTAs, today. Seth, you are the one person in the room who's been a part of these sort of activities. What's the most important thing that people should know about OTAs?
Don't get injured.
Don't get injured.
That's the most important thing. The second is that it actually is valuable, and it's less valuable for older guys, and all of them, like JJ this week at some point will have a quote where they ask him, like, is it a pain in the neck to get motivated for these things? And he'll say, no, it's a chance to improve. And that's the right attitude to have about it. Like, you do, if you're going to be out there, you want to go out and improve. But a lot of it, so much of it's geared towards getting the young guys and the new guys on board mentally. And it's become less and less about physical competition, and they really monitor it. Like, you don't want guys getting injured doing one-on-one pass rush drills with no pads on in May. So they're really careful about exactly how much you can do. But this is where young guys start to show whether they can be trusted or not. And can young guys not blow coverages? Can young offensive linemen know exactly what they're supposed to do? Can they sort out blitzes? All those kinds of things, you start to get a feel for, all right, this kid kind of gets it. Or this kid conversely just isn't working out.
Is this when they do the installs of the offense and defense, or is that more of a thing they do in between OTAs and training
camp?
They
usually, over the course of the spring, they'll install a bunch of the offense and a bunch of the defense, and then they'll go back in training camp and like reinstall it all over again.
Okay.
There's a whole lot of repetition. That's why it's hard for older guys, because you're installing the same offense and the same defense that you've been running for like 5 years, and it gets really, really old really fast. You do, and I know that Joe Flacco is not responsible for mentoring the younger guys. On a good team, the older guys that aren't quarterbacks are also, you know, kind of helping out younger guys during this period and trying to, you know, give them the little tips and the tricks of the trade.
I'm going to be out there tomorrow, and the first thing I'm going to look for really the whole time is basically just offensive line and cornerbacks.
Yeah.
Just seeing what the combination looks like, who's out there, how do they look. I know it's early, so I'm not going to make, you know, huge sweeping judgments in May, but that's what I'm looking for.
Okay, go ahead, Paul.
I wonder how much you can really take out of what you're watching from offensive linemen while you're out there. I just think if they're not going to be as physical as you would like, what should it be that we're looking for out there, Seth?
Sharping his feet. With sharping, you can just watch and see the way he's moving and see what it looks like, because he'll be taking speed rushes versus JJ. Like, I just talked about JJ and how JJ will say the right things. Like, when you go out and watch these things in training camp and non-padded practice, JJ's working. Like, JJ's going to give sharping a really good run for his money, and Sharping's going to learn really quick what it looks like when NFL defensive linemen jump the snap count and how fast you have to be to handle that. So, like, even though there are no pads, he's going to see what happens when those guys get off the ball real fast. And then the big thing, a lot of offensive linemen are struck with this immediately, is how good guys are with their hands in the NFL versus in college. College, you got a lot of guys just kind of running upfield and just try, like, almost like youth soccer players running around not really knowing what they're doing. You get to the NFL and it's a bunch of Jackie Chans with their hands. Like, they're very, very good. And offensive linemen will, like, on that first day especially, will go to punch and then realize that their hands are missing because they've already been swatted out of the way. And you're like, how am I going to block J.J. Watt with no hands? And then J.J.'s already passed you. So you'll see some of that out of Max Sharping. That's normal. The best thing that Max Sharping has going for him right now is that he's going to see J.J. Watt. Well, will he see, how much will he see J.J. Watt? J.J. might, that's what we got to monitor tomorrow. Snap count for J.J. Does J.J. practice
Whitney
at all tomorrow? Yeah, Whitney, all those guys, the younger guys.
I mean, Paul brings
he's not going to see Duke Ejiofor.
Paul, yeah, this is true, because he's on IR if you guys missed that. Paul brings up a good point, which is it's very hard to figure out how good an offensive lineman is during non-padded OTA practice.
Or it's really easy, if you're the Texans, to fool yourself into thinking they're pretty good.
Also that.
Yeah.
But for me, I want to look at, like, what are the combinations? Like, who's lining up where? On what teams are they lining up? Like, who's next to who? Which might give you an idea of what they're trying out or what they're thinking. At least 2+ months before training camp begins. That's the way
well,
I
we know
personally
that,
look
at Titus it. Howard's going to be a left tackle. If all of a sudden Titus Howard started playing right tackle a lot more,
that might indicate
sometime
something.
Between now and August, do we start seeing Titus Howard moving over to right tackle? Then that's going to tell you that they're feeling pretty good about Khalil, and maybe they're feeling good about Titus Howard, but not as good about Sharping. Oh, this will be, you know, this is going to be more fun than I thought it would be. This will be there's going to be all kinds of conspiracy theories here.
Well, that will be one of the most interesting things about the Texans between OTAs and training camp, which is who lines up where on the offensive line, because it's going to give you an idea of what they're thinking for what's going to actually happen during the season.
So
now that's different than our evaluation of how good the line is going to be, because I'm going to reserve all judgment until I see what the preseason is going to look like in the series where they're facing the first team on the other team.
Right. A couple of years ago, we thought that the offensive line might be all right, and then they went in week one versus the Jaguars and gave up 10 sacks.
Yes.
10!
10.
10 sacks. Part of that was because Dwayne Brown was holding out.
I was there.
Yeah.
I saw it.
Now, this is the funny thing, though, because Albert Breer writes in the MMQB that Sharping has flashed. And we don't know what the hell that means, other than the coaches, I'm guessing, are pretty pleased with him. This is where it's starting to get really interesting with Breer, because I believe, is Breer not the same guy who last week pointed out that Bill O'Brien is good with tight ends?
Yes.
And we were trying to figure out exactly what is he basing that off of, other than, is he giving Bill O'Brien credit for developing Gronkowski and Aaron Hernandez?
It's
is it
weird.
Because he wasn't the tight ends coach with them? I mean, he was the offensive coordinator, but I suppose maybe that's what it is. But beyond that, I mean, and I'm not saying this is a criticism of Bill O'Brien. He's had his obstacles here, but it's not like he's taken some dude that wasn't really gifted or something and made him good. He was really good with Gronkowski, and I'll give him that.
I think what he's saying is that Bill O'Brien's the kind of offensive coach who wants to throw more to tight ends.
Okay.
And now he's got the kind of tight ends he wants, and therefore they should be better throwing the tight ends in 2019.
We got to be grateful that Breer is like the Texans' number one fanboy at this point.
Yeah.
He's our guy.
Well,
he's our mole in the national media.
I mean, I'm always checking to see what he writes about the Texans, because I feel like it's usually coming from the organization
it
in some way.
With the Sharping stuff, it 100% is.
Because who else
is
writing
nobody
that?
Else has written or said, wow, Sharping has really flashed.
Yes.
Whoa. Now, maybe he did on Saturday. I didn't see anything bad out of him on Friday. The media wasn't out there on Saturday.
But he did not flash to you.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, maybe they timed 40s and he ran like a 4.3 or something. Like, this kid's like, it's like that bowling kid.
I want to switch gears for a moment. Mad Radio on a Monday. Mike, Seth, and Paul. So I was out late last week. And while I was out in Arizona, Patrick Peterson got the 6-game suspension. This is the guy that I've wanted all offseason. This is the guy I've said for the Texans trading for Patrick Peterson would be like the Astros trading for Justin Verlander a year and a half ago. And I still feel more or less the same way. I still feel the same way about Patrick Peterson. Now, I got to figure out a couple of things here. Number one, if I'm thinking about trading for Patrick Peterson, it's probably not going to happen right now, realistically, especially in May. But if I'm an NFL team thinking about trading for Peterson, I got to figure out what PD did he take. And is that something that should make me worried about how good he still is at the age of 28?
It's true. He's got to be honest. He's got to be brutally honest with teams about what he did.
Yeah.
What exactly did he do?
Because
if he was taking some hardcore stuff, I'd be like, oh, well, okay, is this why you were still good last year? I need to know.
Exactly.
Please let it be. Show me the results. Show me the testing results. Because these players always lie and say, well, I'm not allowed to disclose it. Like, yes, you are. The NFL's not allowed to disclose
it. You can.
It. You can do whatever you want with your own medical information. You can put it out there. So if it was something innocent or something like something that's more of a stimulant variety than like a clenbuterol or something than an actual steroid, then I think teams would be more inclined to say, all right, well, look, that wasn't going to all of a sudden give you superhuman strength and speed at the age of 30. Then they might feel all right with that.
But that is definitely a part of it. You got to figure out what PD he was using
to
make sure a guy at his age is still going to be, you know, the top five cornerback that he's been. But as far as the overall situation, if you look at the Texans' schedule, okay, missing the first six games, like, he's not available for the first six games. So if you trade for him, it's for the last 10 games. The good thing from Houston's standpoint is you play almost all your divisional opponents in the last 10 games. Five of the six games, including both against Indianapolis, are in the last 10 games of the season.
Mm-hmm.
So if you trade for Patrick Peterson, he'd be out there in your most important football games.
You don't want him looking like Tony Mandrich did when he got into the league. I knew somebody that played against Tony Mandrich's rookie year. So Tony Mandrich was drafted in the first round by the Packers back in late 80s,
Michigan
early 90s.
State guy.
And it was right when the NCAA wasn't testing for steroids, but the NFL was. So this dude goes from being like the biggest freakish Hulk-looking thing in the world to like going off of steroids completely.
Yeah.
Immediately. Like, you know, like not tapering off or anything, just went off cold turkey.
Cold turkey.
And he showed up that my friend that played with him, is Jeff Lagerman, said that he had seen him at the combine and he looked like a Greek sculpture, you know, or he looked like he's like, someday they'll have a TV show called Game of Thrones and he'll look like the mountain. And then all of a sudden, like, saw him in September the next year, and he said he had, like, a dimply flat ass and just, like, flab everywhere. He's just a complete mess. So like, I don't want to see Patrick Peterson looking all dimply and flabby because all of a sudden he went off the sauce.
Would you still trade for Patrick Peterson?
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah. We do this in a heartbeat. Well, we all but pled with the Texans and Albert Breer last week to get this done. Do this. If we see Albert Breer say that there's hints that maybe the Texans are looking into Patrick Peterson,
that would be a great sign.
We'll know
sign.
It's close to being done.
It still makes all the sense in the world. Again, if he's still really good, you got to make sure whatever PED he's using. It still makes so much sense, even though he's out for six games.
What if they came out? What if they came out in the press conference and they're like, "Well, listen, we had a good long talk with Patrick Peterson, and we signed him because it turns out that he was not taking an anabolic steroid. He was only taking an anti-estrogen. I'm just going down the list here of various, like, he was taking a selective androgen receptor modulator. He wasn't doing he wasn't doing hardcore dianabol or something." I would be okay with it. Complete and total transparency. Or if Albert Breer says it.
Are the Cardinals now more likely to trade Peterson after the six-game suspension?
I don't know if they're more likely, but it's definitely got to be in the realm of possibility. He's only under contract with them for 1.625 more seasons now instead of 2 years. And I mean, what are you going to get out of him this coming season that is going to help the Cardinals be a contender? Nothing. I mean, Steve Keim maybe keeps him around because he needs to have someone like Patrick Peterson to help him win football games. But I wonder if Steve Keim got a reset button by drafting Kyler Murray, and maybe the Cardinals are looking at Steve Keim and they're saying, okay, you're not in trouble. The Cardinals have no real use for Patrick Peterson right now.
Especially if they start off 0-4
yes.
or something. So that's what you have to watch. And that might
like
be
a trade deadline move.
The Cardinals are just, we're like, okay, are we buyers or sellers at the trade deadline? Listener makes a good point, brings this up. Are the Texans at a position right now where, having given some of the recent hires on their coaching staff, should they be in the business of bringing Patrick Peterson in?
Yeah, why not?
Come on.
Why not?
Well, I mean, we discussed this, Mike, on Thursday and Friday when you were on vacation. I mean, it's a little hypocritical of you to want Patrick Peterson when you hate Brian Cushing's presence
not
on the roster the way that you do.
That's completely hypocritical. What are you talking about? You've got some axe to grind with Brian, and I don't know what it is.
Folks, key main difference here. Patrick Peterson, good at football. Brian
stop,
Cushing,
right,
last
stop,
couple years, not that good at football.
He was injured and banged up. That's all. You keep acting.
Defensive rookie of the year.
You've got to go get some all therapy pro. About Cushing or something. You've got some axe to grind with Cushing
not
that's above
all.
And beyond any other thing.
I like Brian on a personal level. I just had an issue with the last, like, 4 years of
his
career.
And yet all these other guys that have been suspended twice or even yes. once or everything, you're
Lane
just
Johnson,
A-okay with. Yeah.
Because they're good. They're still good at what they do.
Lane Johnson had his, like, both in rapid succession early in his career.
Yes.
Like, Cushing, at least, like, the second one was probably a supplement as he was trying to get himself healthy versus Lane Johnson, who's just trying to cheat.
We can pick up on this. Also, coming up next, this is the right message, but it is absolutely the wrong messenger. Mad Radio.